WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in, third and final hour of the program here on Monday morning. And coming up in a few moments, we're going to be joined by New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. And just if you didn't hear it at the beginning of the program in the first hour, I announced that we're planning for Memorial Day morning to have a radio swap meet. So the idea is I'm going to broadcast from the parking lot. It probably won't be 6 to 9, probably be a little bit later so that we make sure the sun is up in time. But 7 to 10, maybe 7 to 9, 7 to 10, whatever. I'll be broadcasting from outside. We want people to come down with items they're looking to trade, and then you can trade them right in the parking lot with somebody else. No cash sales, though. That involves all kinds of permitting and paperwork that I don't want to get involved in. But you can have swaps right here in the parking lot, something you want to trade for something else. And then, you know, we'll have you come on the radio and we'll talk to you about your interesting items that you bring down. So the more weirder, the unique, you know, don't just come down here with a bucket of Christmas decorations. Like, we're not looking for that. We're looking for like something weird, unique, different. And then if you want to trade it with somebody else, you can. But the only catch is, again, no cash sales. And then you have to bring everything that you bring with you. If somebody doesn't take it away and trade with you or just take it from you, you got to bring it with you. You can't leave it in the parking lot. So we'll have more details on that coming up. But that's the plan for Memorial Day morning. But joining us now, we have New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Doing all right. It's a beautiful day out there already.
Yes, it's shaping up to be. The sun is shining finally, especially after this weekend of very cloudy, rainy days.
And, of course, now this is the time of year when everything starts happening, where the city council is going to be out at Little League opening days and all kinds of stuff happening. So you'll have a full calendar if you don't already.
Yes. The summertime is always an exciting time of year for, I think, everyone. We have amazing beaches, as everyone knows, here in New Bedford. So I think every year I always make a point to get my beach pass and want to enjoy the community environment that we have. But as you pointed out, all the different Little League events, especially this year, Whaling City is celebrating their 75 years. This, you know, past Tuesday, we had our celebration meeting where we got to honor them and their 75 years of service to our city. So that, you know, such a good point to bring up, especially as we finally see some spring weather breaking up this morning.
The Whaling City League has always been run by some great folks. I remember when I was doing the Little League reporting all the time for the Standard Times, started off as Big League Dreams and it became South Coast in Action. And just every week having 300-400 names of kids in the newspaper from all these different sports leagues. And that was always like a first-rate organization, got me all the great information all the time. They treated it like it was an actual real league, like a professional league rather, and kept all the statistics and everything. Great photographs from Bruce David. I mean, they really knew what they were mm-hmm. doing, and they had a weekly newsletter and all of that. So people involved in that have put in a lot of effort for a long time.
Well, yeah, and I think what's really telling is during the celebration meeting, what was remarked was a lot of the men that are there still leading the league now. All of their children are grown up, aren't even playing anymore, mm-hmm. but they're still there. And I think that's really such a great support system that you see in our community, where it's, even though their children might not be benefiting from it anymore, they know the importance of this league in the community for the future and for our youth right now that are benefiting from it. And they know that that's why it's so important for them to still be there to help uplift it and keep it going strong for another 75 years and so on and so forth. So it's always so empowering to be able to honor them and to uplift those in our community that are uplifting others.
And I know it was a tough decision for them, but a few years ago, well, probably quite a while ago now, but they made the decision to open the league up to other communities mm-hmm. because they saw that so many of these other baseball leagues around were, shrinking or disappearing, and they didn't have people that wanted to volunteer, and they knew that they had the infrastructure to be able to support more people. So that was a nice thing as well. Is there anybody else in the celebration meeting you'd like to recognize?
Yeah, you know, one of the big names I want to recognize too, because he doesn't like to get a lot of recognition, is our athletic director, Tom Tarpey. And you know, it was very glaring. We recognized a number of student athletes that night. And what I thought was great is, so basically how it works, we don't have any specific order. How it works is based on when my colleagues put in their request for recognition. And it just so happened to work out that the student athletes' names went first. And then the athletic director, we recognized him for being the athletic director of the year for Massachusetts, which I think was a very fitting award for Thomas Tarpey. And when you heard these other student athletes that came up for all of their recognition for a number of young women in our schools that are breaking records, some of them the first really in Massachusetts, and they all recognized him, not just the students but the coaches as well. Mm-hmm. That mentioned, you know, I think one of the coaches that stood out, you know, they mentioned they call him and say, hey, like, is there any way we can get a used item? And he said, well, how much is a brand new one? And going above and beyond to find ways around budget constraints and other options if he had to go into his own pocket if he had to. And, you know, one of the students, which I thought was very touching, mentioned in her remarks, you know, how it was always her and her coach, and always right behind them was Thomas Tarpey. And that's what they always felt, and every student felt that, is that, you know, the athletic director, Thomas Tarpey, was always right beside them or right behind them, always right there, one step away. So I you know, I think that was another great representation to see for our students, is just another adult in our community. And, you know, when he finally got up there to be recognized, for him again, even in that moment where it was really supposed to be about him, he made it again about the students, where it's, you know, he thanked us obviously for that recognition, but it was, for him, the most important part was he did it for the students. That's all he cared about. And he said for him, the most important part was that he got to be here to witness the students that were recognized that night. For me, it's always so special to get to see that happen. And he also got to mention his career throughout the years. He mentioned, you know, being born and raised in New Bedford. He obviously left for some time to go to college. And then when he graduated college, came back, it was important to him to be an educator here in New Bedford and then have his whole career in New Bedford Public Schools. And that was always important to him. So for me, it's so powerful for our students to see that example in our school systems, especially because we often talk about, express how much talent we have here in our city of New Bedford, and we want to continue to nurture that. And I think he's a excellent example of the talent that we have in the city, and how if we are, you know, are able to nurture and really lift up our students, we can really just flourish here in our community.
And I think, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Tom didn't address this, and it's probably something that wasn't brought up, but he saw the athletic department through a very period of flux, because they changed the way that leagues operate. They changed, especially when it came to, you know, football, which New Bedford was a powerhouse in for a long time and would kind of ebb and flow in terms of that. But they made changes to all different kinds of things in his time as athletic director. And he's been able to navigate the school's department through that without any hangups or anything. And that I think is more impressive than anything, because it has been a time of flux for high school sports in general. You've had, you know, you've gone everything from less kids playing to some schools instituting user fees to just not being able to find the budget to make it happen. And as you said, you know, being able to replace equipment with something brand new instead of something used might have been unheard of. Mm-hmm. You know, years ago, they would have said, well, of course you're gonna buy something brand new. This is New Bedford and we're the best and we rule the Big Three, and of course we're gonna buy brand new. And that's just not the reality of the situation anymore. So for him to still be able to make that happen is impressive.
Yeah, I just think the overall spirit of Thomas Tarpey, you know, I think that it can be underrated a lot of times, the mm-hmm. importance of having that type of energy. You need to have that. A lot of times the students here in New Bedford, if they don't have someone who believes in them, anyone who works with students or children, that is, I think, the biggest factor when it comes to anything. If they don't feel that the adult or whoever's in their life doesn't believe that they can actually achieve something, they're going to believe that. So I think for all the student athletes that we did recognize that night, for a number of them, even the blanking on the young woman's name, she's very short. She was a wrestler. And we kept joking that she could probably wrestle each one of us counselors. But she had mentioned that she didn't think she was didn't have what it took to be a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of was like, oh, I guess I'll try it out. I guess I could do it. And then, you know, even her coach, I think, mentioned like she failed, I think, 99 times. But it was just that one, you know, the 100th time that it took to like really overcome it and realize, oh, no, I'm actually really good at this. So it's really important for these students to have people in their lives like Thomas Tarpey to really motivate them and keep them going for that 100th time to keep persevering and know that they have what it takes and not to give up.
And speaking of schools, schools were in the news quite a bit the last week, of course, with the Department of Education pulling back funding and some of that funding going to some key projects in New Bedford. You know, because you have a guy like Andrew O'Leary as a superintendent who's very creative when it comes to financing, that's what he was doing before he was the superintendent, you were able to kind of keep some of these in line. But one of the big things that was discussed was, you know, the fact that the student health center at the high school is something that is now in question, if that's going to be able to get built, and something that I feel is important. And another possibility is that some of these other projects won't get fully funded. Just your thoughts on the clawback of some of this funding and the way that at least we're able to find ways around some of it.
Yeah, so it's obviously very disappointing to have any of this even in question. What I would say is I think that we're still fighting that in the courts. A lot of this administration, administration, a lot of this is just a distraction. And obviously we take them very seriously because of this position that Donald Trump is in and their whatever people that you want to, I don't even think that they're leaders. That, you know, it's just unfortunate that he's put these people in positions that obviously are very underqualified, that have no idea what they're doing. Linda McMahon as our Secretary of Education. I love the McMahon family. I often, Shane McMahon, my name is Shane. And back when I used to watch WWF, when it was the World Wrestling Federation, they had to change it because of the World Wildlife Fund. Yeah. So that's how far back I used to go in WWE and WWF, but I used to take her, you know, entertaining wise, fun and seriously then. But that's all this administration is entertainment. I'm no longer having any fun. And so when you're taking into consideration that aspect of it, that's all this administration is about, is the wow factor and how much ratings that they can get. And that's what I think about anytime something like this happens, is how much ratings can we get? How can we be on the news? So I say all that to say it's not over. And I have a feeling that much like everything else that happens in this administration, they do something outrageous that is against the law, that's illegal, and it's challenged in the courts. The attorneys general throughout many states here will challenge it. We will win, and then it will go back and it will, you know, be like it never happened. But then they caused a lot of chaos and fear and destruction through that process. So I have a feeling, and it's my hope and desire, that this will be overturned and it will show that we did everything that we were supposed to do. And I think one of the things we should really, again, recognize and applaud about our school department under the direction of Andrew O'Leary and our school committee as well, did an amazing work with our ESSER funds, which I don't know the full acronym, but the ESSER funds are essentially the equivalency of our ARPA funds. But on the school side, they worked very hard to make sure that the funds were allocated and appropriated within the appropriated time that was lined out, which that was excruciating. The federal government changed it so many times. And so I believe that the legal system that we have will persevere and show that the Trump-Vance administration, the Trump-Vance-Musk administration, will not be able to claw back this money, and we will be able to proceed as planned.
And by the way, also allocated it for projects that fall under the guidelines of what it could be used for. The most ridiculous argument that I've heard here on the radio for the last couple of weeks is, well, this is COVID money and COVID's gone. Why do you need to use COVID money to build the student health center? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of right there in the reasoning. You want to build this so that you don't have another issue like COVID. You want to be able to have these kids be able to get the medical care that they need when they can't get that at home. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the downside of it. I don't understand why people are so against this. I don't understand why they're against the central kitchen. I think it's because they don't realize half the schools in New Bedford don't even have a kitchen in there to prepare a hot meal for kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that aspect of it. And then the other argument that I make, two towards it, is all the deficits that we faced during, not the financial deficits, but the educational deficits, mm-hmm. during COVID, people being out or trying to learn in different unique ways. And so using this unique infusion of money, that one-time unique fusion of money this way, a lot of different, again, this is why I mentioned that we should recognize and applaud the way our school department did it. A lot of other school departments used it in very foolish ways where they just said, oh, well, we'll just use this one-time money where we'll, you know, put it towards salaries that will just kind of disappear. But we've been able to use it where it will be have a lasting effect, as you mentioned, on our central kitchen, so our kids will have nutritious meals for X amount of years to come, and we'll be able to see it for more years to come, outlasting COVID, as people mentioned.
And also squeezing a few more years out of century-old buildings, too.
That as well, too. And then taking the burden off of, as people often mention, the taxpayers here for other, because these are all things that would deteriorate over time that we need to be able to fix in the school's infrastructure. So it's, these are all things that, yes, you could say, oh, COVID's over, this is why we need to take this money back, but it's all related to COVID in that grand scheme of things. COVID exacerbated a lot of the issues that we had, and that's why this money was infused into these communities to help get us back, as, again, the term build back better, and that's the whole idea behind it. And so to try to reverse that and to put us back into a more dire situation is just absurd, because how is that putting America first? That's my old question there, but no one can answer that, I suppose.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll have the news with Mike, and then we can take your phone calls with Council President Burgo, 508-996-0500. We will be right back.
A new record for flu and measles deaths. A surprise visit from Pope Francis over the weekend. And a new job for Tom Brady.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
A new study shows Parkinson's disease may soon be more concerning than Alzheimer's. Cases of Parkinson's disease are estimated to rise by 30% by 2050 in North America and will double globally. Symptoms of Parkinson's disease affect mostly movement, but can also range from mental health effects and pain and tiredness. There is currently no cure for Parkinson's disease, and scientists are working to determine what triggers the devastating illness. A student in Fort Bend, Texas, is saying none of the above after being accepted to all 8 Ivy League schools. Ten Pham, a senior at George Bush High School, been given a welcome mat at Brown, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, Princeton, UPenn, and Yale. Pham received a total of nearly $3 million in scholarship offers. His decision? Pham says he's decided to go with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology at MIT. Pope Francis made a surprise appearance in St. Peter's Square on Palm Sunday. The Pope wished a happy Holy Week to the crowd of more than 20,000 following the conclusion of Sunday's Mass. According to the Vatican News, Francis greeted the faithful from his wheelchair and stopped occasionally to talk to people. The 88-year-old was not wearing his nasal tubes for supplemental oxygen as he recovers from his recent life-threatening battle with double pneumonia. North Carolina is reporting a recent number of flu deaths.
This week, the Department of Health and Human Services announced there had been over 500 flu-related deaths for the 2024-25 season. It's the highest statewide total since reporting began in 2009. flu-related deaths in the state were nearly on par with the number of deaths caused by COVID-19. Officials also said cuts to federal grants have resulted in a $100 million loss for the health department. I'm Jim Forbes.
The U.S. has its highest number of measles cases since 2019.
On Friday, the CDC announced there are now 712 confirmed cases of measles across 24 states. Officials are warning that the number is likely an undercount due to delays in reporting. Currently, 11% of this year's measles patients have needed to be hospitalized, and the majority of those were children. Roughly 90% of the confirmed cases have been in unvaccinated people. I'm Lisa Carton.
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says the exemption of electronic devices from recently announced tariffs is not permanent.
In an interview with ABC's This Week, Lutnick said while phones, computers, and chips are exempt from these tariffs, they won't be exempt from semiconductor tariffs that are coming soon.
So this is not like a permanent sort of exemption. He's just clarifying that these are not available to be negotiated away by countries.
Lutnick went on to say these types of products are vital to U.S. national security. It's therefore a security risk for them not to be manufactured domestically. He confirmed that tariffs on pharmaceuticals will also be announced separately. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A man is in custody and will face attempted murder and arson charges following an early morning fire at the Pennsylvania governor's mansion.
Governor Josh Shapiro says the violence needs to stop.
This kind of violence is becoming far too common in our society. And I don't give a damn if it's coming from one particular side or the other.
According to the Pennsylvania State Police, firefighters responded to the Harrisburg residence of Shapiro at about 2 a.m. Shapiro says his family was home at the time but were able to escape unharmed. He went on to say the attack was targeted, but a specific motive was not known. Pennsylvania State Police said while it's an ongoing investigation, they do believe it was an act of arson. I'm Mark Mayfield.
WBSM Sports.
It was the Red Sox over the White Sox 3-1 yesterday. Boston takes on the Tampa Bay Rays tonight at 7:05. Celtics beat the Charlotte Hornets 93-86. And it was the Bruins over the Penguins 4-1 yesterday. The Bees take on the New Jersey Devils tomorrow at 7. Tom Brady opening his own trading card store. Card Vault by Tom Brady opened on Friday night at New Jersey's American Dream Mall. Brady was joined by hundreds of fans while cutting the grand opening ribbon. This is now the fourth Card Vault location. The others are located in the Boston area.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Tons of sunshine. We are going to find temperatures this afternoon that will top out in the mid to upper 50s. As we go to Tuesday, we're going to see mostly cloudy skies with a 50% chance of rain. We're looking for highs that should top out in the lower 50s. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station and get breaking news alerts and all of our content with the WBSM app.
You are listening to the Tim Weisbert Show on WBSM.
And of course, that is that's Maddie, the daughter of Stephanie Burke, who you hear with me on Spooky South Coast. And happy birthday to Stephanie. It was her birthday yesterday. So we also, you know, one of the big topics of discussion here on the radio has been Community Preservation Act funding. As I was talking with you about off air, you know, I remember when we had the ballot question about whether or not it should continue and people were calling up against it. And I laid out the math for them about how little they pay out of their own taxes, but how much it goes to benefit. And so I know the council was hearing about the projects and approving the projects. Talk to us about some of the projects that are going to be approved.
Yeah. So, you know, we had 23 projects that were submitted this year. There was a number of applicants. And I think one of the biggest complaints or criticisms that you hear from the council to the CPC, the Community Preservation Committee, oftentimes is there's not enough people applying from out the entire city. And this year we saw there was, I think, actually three projects that did not receive any funding, which is, it's difficult, obviously, when you see some projects that weren't. You obviously want to be able to give everyone some money, and I think the CPC has a very difficult job of trying to review and give everyone at least some amount. And I think they do an amazing job of trying to review and fairly review and approve as much as they can to as many projects as possible. So this year they were able to approve 23 projects. What happened out of the $2 million that were issued, the council did remove out one of the projects. What I will say, though, publicly is that doesn't necessarily mean that that one project will not move forward. The one project that I'm referring to in question is the Acushnet River Rowing Center. I always mix up the saying. Hold on. I'm trying to find the wording of it. It's the Acushnet River Rowing Center. Acushnet River Rowing Center dock, which was $150,000. So we did have that reduction out of the $2 million and 23 projects. So we approved 22 out of the 23 projects. And so and the reason for that, too, which I will say publicly here, is out of all the projects for the CPA, typically, at least I'll say in my tenure, we only see projects get a lot of support. We hardly ever see any letters of opposition or people speak out at the actual, you know, obviously people here on the radio might call in and speak out about the CPA or CPC, but this was the first time for me that I saw someone actually submit a letter or speak out. And so for me in the finance committee, I did vote no on this project just because I wanted to look into the letter of opposition. And then we did have an opportunity to look further into it, and we want to be able to have a further discussion around the rowing dock. Doesn't necessarily mean that it won't be approved, that it might not move forward. I know a number of individuals, obviously, that have been working hard on this rowing dock, especially our Parks Department. We're very concerned about the reduction, but I just think it warrants a further discussion. But yeah, so
and trying to be fair, if somebody's in opposition, you want them to be able to have their say as to why.
Correct. And especially because of these public fundings, we want the public to feel that they're heard, especially when we're deciding on these tax dollars, especially because we know a number of individuals feel as though the CPA or CPC aren't fair or objective, which I don't believe that's true. I believe they are very fair and objective. And to speak further on the CPA funds, again, people might disagree with me or disagree with this opinion, but I feel as though the CPA funds benefit the city as a whole. You know, even if the project, for example, might not be in your specific ward or your specific neighborhood, it benefits the taxpayers as a whole, especially if we're improving the city as a whole. You know, when we talk about the different projects, a number of these projects are for housing. And so if we're increasing the tax base by adding more housing units, that it helps you as a taxpayer for increasing the tax base. So, and therefore that is helping you as a taxpayer. Also, if we're helping out in terms of different, you know, whether it's the Whaling Museum or the Zyterian Theater, I know a lot of times people get upset, or other nonprofit groups that people criticize about giving funding to, but they're offering different amenities throughout the city that brings in tourism that helps our overall tax base. And so therefore helps relieve the burden. So over time, you know, those kind of things that have to do with community preservation or historic, you know, preservation is a really, it's very beneficial is the point that I'm trying to make.
And there's a reason why that's all under the guidelines of the Community Preservation Act.
Correct.
Including housing.
And I just, I wish people looked at it under that lens more often, especially because obviously when I think of a lot of times we have the discussion around Ward 1 residents where there sometimes isn't a lot of projects up in the Ward 1 area because a lot of it's just, there's a lot of housing up there. right now, and there's not a lot of developable land for housing, so there might not be a lot of housing projects up there for CPA. But I do believe that there are some parks up there that maybe our Parks Department can apply for some CPA funds, and there are discussions around maybe there are other areas up in the North End that could be applying for CPA funds. The task that we have at hand, especially myself as an elected official, I need to take on this task, is working with people in the North End of the city to apply for those CPA funds. And the CPC does do the work to educate people. They host every year, and I have explained to them, and I've told people too, that during this programming that you've given me the opportunity, when the time comes, the CPC will announce when they do their programming to let people know how to apply for CPA funds, and when that open enrollment comes, I will announce that here on our Monday programming. So when that open enrollment comes, and when they do their, because I forget at what point beforehand, they do multiple rounds of public forums to let people know here's how to apply before they even do the open enrollment.
They're always welcome to come on too and talk more in depth about it as well.
And I'm sure that they would do that as well. So that's why I don't put too much blame on the CPC, because I believe that they do the work already that's needed to educate people. It's that old saying, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
And also maybe for some of those projects, because of the nature of the folks, you know, that are up there, maybe when they have projects, they pass the hat and, you know, they get the donations that they need to be able to handle these. So they're not thinking about utilizing that funding.
There's that aspect too. And one of the other features that I really enjoy about the CPC, when they're sending us the applications on the forms, when we're reviewing them, they list what ward each project's in. And that to me tells me that when they're reviewing these applications, I think they're also trying to be mindful of where the projects are located and where they're spread out, to try to make sure that when the money is being dispersed, it's being evenly dispersed throughout the city. It just so happens, obviously, that a number of the applicants happen to sometimes be located sometimes the center of the city, or sometimes more south or downtown located. So it just, again, I think in order for us to be more critical of the CPC, we would have to give them more applicants in the North End. If you had a bunch of Ward 1 applicants and then they weren't getting the money, then maybe there would be an argument to say, oh, they're not giving any money to Ward 1, they're only giving it to downtown or what have you. Then you could make that argument. But if you're not giving them any, you know, it was the same argument I would make about housing. If they weren't making housing a priority, when I wanted the CPC to increase the percentage of housing, but the issue became, well, there's not enough people building housing, not enough people applying for that. And then that's what ended up happening, was more people started applying for housing. They were able to give out more, and we're seeing that now as housing is becoming more of a priority. It's becoming more of a task, and they're able to give out that funding. So I think in that same regard, if we're encouraging more people in the North End to apply, we'll see more funding in the North End as well.
Just really quickly before we have to take a break, but you know, you mentioned that there was only that one letter of opposition in front of these projects. Yes. We know there were some very controversial projects, at least, you know, here on the radio. They didn't get letters, things like the Capitol Theater, things like the Sober House. Those didn't get letters of opposition. But did councilors talk at all about hearing opposition to them? Is that something that might have come up in the discussions?
Well, no, and that was a part of the reason why, again, I mentioned, I think off air, we were talking about that too, is we would hear maybe offhand those kind of things, like the YWCA, when people falsely characterized it as a sober home, which it was not, you know, false claims like that. That's why for me, when the CPC actually received official documentation of a letter of opposition, that was unheard of for me. When you have actual people pushing to try to stop other projects and then they don't actually receive any letter of oppositions. So to me, that was very telling. So that's why I can only speak. I haven't really talked to my colleagues about this, but for me, that was one of the main drivers for why I said, okay, well, hold on, let's look at this further. So I think that was one of the biggest issues. And then even some of the other projects, as you mentioned before, in past CPC grants, the Capitol Theater, as people, you know, try to vilify the work of the CEDC and the work that they're doing there, never received any letter of opposition. So I just felt like this, again, not that I think the rowing dock is bad and that it shouldn't move forward, but I just felt it allows us to give further discussion for the public view.
I just wonder because, you know, I'm a big supporter of the CPA and the work that the CPC does with it, but also maybe people just aren't educated complicated enough that there's a process that you are supposed to submit a letter of opposition formally if you are opposed to the project.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I think is so great about a lot of our public forums that we have. And I often talk about this during city council meetings when we have public forums as the president or even chairs. We often, a lot of times, after any public forum, we're supposed to say, if anyone here wish to speak in opposition, speak in opposition. Or we say, recorded in opposition, recorded in opposition. So that's a part of the legal terms that we have to ask that of anyone in the room. So you don't even have to say anything. You could just literally stand up and say, hi, I'm Shane Burgo. I live at such and such street and I'm in opposition. So we ask that in any public forum, and that's for any commission, whether it's the park board or the licensing board or city council meetings or for CPC. So that's anywhere in the city. You can stand up and speak out against things that are happening in the city.
All right, we've got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned. All right, we are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. And I know there's a bunch of meetings happening this week, both council meetings and community meetings that you wanted to highlight.
Yes. So, I guess I'll start with our council meetings. So our council meetings tonight in particular, we have our housing committee, which is chaired by Ian Abreu. That's tonight at 7 p.m. in the council chamber. And then tomorrow we have our appointments and briefing meeting, which is chaired by Naomi Carney. That's also in the council chamber at 7 p.m. And then Wednesday night we have our committee on finance meeting, which is chaired by Linda Morad, which is at 7 p.m. also in the council chamber as well. So those are our three committee meetings. Again, tonight we have housing, tomorrow appointments and briefing, and on Wednesday night, committee on finance, all at 7 p.m. And then tonight, for our community meetings or our neighborhood meetings, we have the West End Neighborhood Group, which is run by the Shantae Paris, who's the community member who runs it. And our city council liaison is Ward 4 Councilor Derek Baptiste. That is tonight at 6 p.m. at Kearney Academy Elementary School, which is at 247 Elm Street. Again, that's tonight at 6 p.m. And then tomorrow night, April 15th, is the A.J. Gomes School Neighborhood Group, which is run by Buddy Andrade. That's at 6:30 p.m. And that's located at, obviously, A.J. Gomes School at 286 South 2nd Street. And so that one doesn't necessarily have a solid city council liaison, mainly because we have a lot of city council meetings that happen on that particular Tuesday. But a number of my colleagues do frequent that meeting. For example, Linda Morad attends it. Brian Gomes and Derek Baptiste are frequent councilors that do rotate that meeting. And then lastly, this week, on Wednesday, April 16th, at 6 p.m., the Clark's Point Neighborhood Group, which is at 1000 South Rodney French Boulevard, that's run by Celine Sariva, and our city council liaison is Ryan Pereira. So those are our three neighborhood groups this week. I hope that people get out to those neighborhood groups. As I mentioned, I keep pointing out that it's so important that you are a part of your neighborhood groups.
That's where your voice is heard.
Yes. And then I also want to highlight, too, that on this Saturday, April 19th, in recognition of Earth Day, the HEAL Center, in collaboration with the West End Neighborhood Group, Shantae Paris, will be doing an Earth Day cleanup at 10 a.m., from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., hosted outside of the NAACP New Bedford building, which is at 95 Cedar Street. So from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., we'll be there cleaning up for Earth Day. And then they'll also be hosting a lunch afterwards for the volunteers from 12 to 2 p.m. So if anyone would like to come and help clean up the neighborhood, again, that's this Saturday, April 19th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
And you'll still get home with plenty of time before WrestleMania. So, all right, we got to take our final break. We'll be back to wrap things up with Council President Burgo in just a few moments. And we are back. This has been an A1 discussion with Council President Burgo this week, but we're just about out of time. But we'll do it again next week.
Yes, definitely. I'm looking forward to it.
And next week, of course, as you mentioned, everything is coming up. We've got Easter Sunday coming up too, right?
So. Yes. I'm looking forward to it. Got to get my Easter baskets at Basket of Grace. I'm looking forward to that. Just opened up at the Kilburn Mill. I hope everyone goes and checks out all of the amazing baskets she has over there.
And maybe we can get you to be a WWE fan again in time for WrestleMania this weekend.
We'll see about that.
So, and for those.